You are listening to Lowell Association for the Blind's Lab Radio. Lab Radio is a member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network, your main source of accessible community news and information. Located in Lowell, Massachusetts, we read local news, editorials, feature stories, and more. Lab Radio is brought to you by volunteers and staff of the Lowell Association for the Blind. Lab would like to thank the Nancy L. and Richard K. Donahue Charitable Foundation for their support.
Now, it's my pleasure to introduce and welcome to the podium MCB Commissioner John Oliveira.
All right. Good morning, everybody. It's great to see a full house. We have the overflow area filling up, and I think this will be one of the largest crowds we've had here for White Cane Awareness Day. And right. So, good morning and welcome. It is with great pride that I stand with you today here at the Massachusetts State House. We celebrate White Cane Awareness Day. Each year, this day reminds us of how significant the white cane is, not only as a vital tool for safe travel and independence, but also a symbol of dignity and equality. Did you know that James Biggs, back in the 1920s, is the first person who is commonly cited as being the first documented user of the white cane? So he was a photographer back in Bristol, England, and so Mr. Biggs lost his vision later in life, and he used to use a walking stick, and so he painted his walking stick white so that the other pedestrians and motorists for that time would be able to spot him easily, and he wouldn't have an accident. So that was very good of him, and so he is commonly known as the first person to use the white cane. However, we know that canes were used as mobility aids for people who were blind for centuries. So in the field of orientation and mobility, commonly known as O&M, during the World War II, veterans were returning because they lost their sight due to some kind of accident related to the war. They were needing new ways to navigate. So at Valley Forge Army Hospital in Pennsylvania, Dr. Richard Hoover developed the long cane technique. It's a systematic method that used for travel that became the foundation for what we now know as formal orientation mobility training that is delivered to all of our consumers today. His pioneering ways helped transform the white cane into not just a walking tool, but into a powerful symbol of independence, confidence for all legally blind or blind individuals. Today, there are several types of white canes that are made available for individuals to use. Most people, when they start using the white cane, are using a straight white cane. But if you're active and mobile, you want to, most people convert to the folding cane or telescopic cane. That becomes much easier to put away. It's much easier to fold and get into a car without having the straight cane. It's much easier if you're going to a restaurant, fold it when you get to your booth or your table, and so it's out of the way and doesn't trip anybody up. So that's why most people who are active and mobile prefer the folding cane and or the telescopic cane. Another type of cane that many of our individuals who need extra support and stability is the support cane. And that provides you additional assistance with your balance and also lets people know about your vision loss, and they're aware, and it gives you the support that you need. So there are many different types of canes. Again, as I said, there's the guide cane. There's an ID cane, which is used maybe for indoor traveling. Oh, but it's used basically, it's thin, it's light, And for someone who has good travel vision, as we refer to as someone who's legally blind, they may have some good travel vision. They want the ID cane just to identify that they do have a vision loss. But the latest development in canes is a cane that allows you to use GPS on your phone, Bluetooth to connect to that cane, and also you can use artificial intelligence to speak to the cane, and it will announce the different street crossings as you cross them, either via your smartphone or a speaker at the top of the cane. So there are many, many different uses that this can come in handy for, but this is because right now it's a pricey cane, the standard canes are the ones that most people are using. So each of these canes, again, has a specific purpose for the user. But the message that carried with any of the canes is that someone who is legally blind is able to travel independently through the communities that they live in or around the country and even around the world. So I've spoken to you about the different types of canes, but I want to touch briefly on the acceptance of using a cane. Many individuals who are experiencing vision loss take a bit of time before they accept the use of the cane. And they'll try all different methods. They'll try not going out at night because they see better during the day. They'll try following people and never go out alone. But the part of accepting the fact that you are starting to lose your vision and your vision loss is becoming more severe is the time that when you start accepting the use of that white cane. You now recognize that the white cane is the tool that gets you where you need to go safely and independently. So White Cane Awareness Day also is a call for action. Whether we're trying to ensure safe streets, sidewalks, expanding access to education and employment, or celebrating the leadership and achievements of individuals who are legally blind, today underscores the importance and the building of a commonwealth where everyone can thrive and use their white cane to get around independently. We have a great program for you here today. I'm proud to share that Health and Human Services Secretary Kayame Mahanya is here with us. We also have chairs of the Joint Committee of Children, Families, and Persons with Disabilities. Senator Robin Kennedy is here with us, and also Representative Jay Livingstone. You also will hear from some of our members in the community. And finally, we will present the Meg Robertson Annual Mobility Awards. And Meg was a former Director of Orientation and Mobility here at the agency, was a longtime instructor here, and is now happily retired and is in contact with us frequently and is still working out in the mobility field, just advocating, and is doing a lot of traveling and enjoying her retirement. I want to also take time to thank the Carroll Center for the Blind for providing the wonderful refreshments that you've had the opportunity to enjoy here today. And thank you for the Talking Information Center. Their broadcast today is bringing this event to a wider audience than those who are able to come here. And we appreciate your work with the blind community and your interest in being here and helping us spread the word about White Cane Awareness Day. And I'd be remiss if I did not thank my wonderful staff at MCB, the White Cane Awareness Committee, who has worked many, many hours to bring this all together, the Lions Clubs, who provided volunteers today, Carl Richardson, who was able to mobilize, last I heard, about a dozen volunteers, State House staff folks that have volunteered to come and help today, our partners, our advocates, our families, individuals who use the white cane every day with pride and purpose. Together, let's continue to raise awareness, strengthen accessibility, and create opportunity for the residents of Massachusetts who are legally blind. So now it is my pleasure to introduce Health and Human Service Secretary Kiame Mahanya to bring to you the proclamation from Governor Maura Healey.
John, would you like to bow back to the chair?
Thank you, Commissioner. It's great to be with you all today to celebrate White Cane Awareness Day. Today we celebrate the independence and determination of people who are blind or visually impaired. We also celebrate the steps we have taken as a state to promote full inclusion for people with disabilities. However, there is still much more work to be done, and I thank all of you for joining me in that work. Thank you also to the MCB staff for the work you do to provide orientation and mobility services, including White Cane training. And I am proud to read the White Cane Awareness Day proclamation on behalf of Governor Healey. This is the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, a proclamation. Whereas every resident of Massachusetts has a right to lead a full and independent life, one which includes education, productive employment, and access to the community, and whereas a white cane enhances an individual's potential for full participation in society by aiding every person who is blind to move freely and safely from place to place, and whereas we recognize the importance of orientation and mobility training for children and adults who are blind in learning how to use a white cane. And whereas the law requires that motorists come to a full stop when a pedestrian using a white cane or guide dog is crossing a street. And whereas through public awareness, the Commonwealth of Massachusetts encourages all residents to recognize a white cane as a tool of independence for pedestrians who are blind. Now, therefore, I, Maura T. Healey, Governor of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, do hereby proclaim October 15, 2025 to be White Cane Awareness Day and urge all residents of the Commonwealth to take cognizance of this event and participate fittingly in its observance. Given at the Executive Chamber in Boston this first day of October in the year 2025, and of the independence of the United States of America, the 249th. So this beautiful text is here, and I'm leaving it so that Commissioner Oliveira can decorate his desk with his new proclamation. Thank you.
Thank you, Secretary Mahanya. Next, I'd like to introduce the chairs of the Joint Committee on Children, Families, and Persons with Disabilities, Senator Robin Kennedy and Representative Jay Livingstone.
Good morning. It is such a pleasure to be with you all here today. My name is Robin Kennedy. I'm the state senator of the 1st Worcester District, hailing from the beautiful city of Worcester. I am about 5'7". I am a white woman with brown hair and freckles, and today I'm wearing a black sweater and gray pants. And I want to thank you all for inviting us to join you here today, probably one of the few events that can bring me out of my district on a Friday into the State House, but really is my pleasure to be able to be here with you, and certainly always wonderful to be here with our commissioner, Commissioner Oliveira, and certainly Secretary Mahanya. And I, too, want to echo the gratitude to the Mass Commission for the Blind, for the Carroll Center, for the volunteers, the Lions Club, the volunteers that are here today. And in that, I want to give a shout-out to my staff, Carol and Brian, who are serving as volunteers as part of this event today. And I have to, I'm looking around the room, and I don't know that my Worcester advocates are here, but I would be remiss if I didn't give a shout. Okay. Thank you. There you are. There you are, Liz and Peg, and I have to give such credit to Liz and Peg and our team of VIPs from Worcester who do an incredible job year-round making sure that officials in our community are understanding of the importance of the white cane and how inaccessible our community is today and the changes that we need to make to ensure that. And just in the past year, we had the opportunity to bring new administrator of the RTA in Worcester through a white cane day and a guided tour to be able to understand our public transportation system and the gaps that we have to make sure that public transportation in our community is fully accessible. Because that's really what's so important about this day, is in that it shines a light on the achievements, the strength, and the independence of individuals who are blind or have low vision. It's about recognition and reflection. It reminds us that accessibility and inclusion are shared responsibilities that shape the kind of commonwealth that we choose to be. The white cane is more than a mobility tool. It is a declaration of freedom and self-determination. It allows individuals to move confidently through their communities, pursue education and employment, and live lives rooted in dignity and independence. It stands as a symbol of progress, resilience, and the right to navigate the world safely and fully. Each tap of the cane echoes the message that every person deserves equal access to opportunity and space. It challenges us to build a culture of awareness, respect, and inclusion, whether it's driving attentively at intersections, ensuring sidewalks and crosswalks are accessible. And a shout out to Liz, make sure those truncated domes get fixed so they're pointing in the right direction. And championing policies that remove barriers. Each action we take contributes to a safer, more inclusive environment. Public safety is about physical infrastructure, but more importantly, it's about empathy, education, and commitment to equity in every space we share. As we celebrate White Cane Day, let's continue working together to make Massachusetts a place where everyone can move freely, safely, and with confidence. I want to, as I close out and turn it to my partner, Chair Livingstone, I also want to echo a gratitude to Carl Richardson, the ASL interpreters who are here, the CART interpretation that is here. As we often note, Carl helps us make sure and holds us accountable that our committee hearings are fully accessible to every resident in the Commonwealth who wants the opportunity to participate in their government, and we couldn't do it without our participation with MCB, Carl, and in his entire team. So with that, I will turn it over to my friend and partner in this work, Chair Jay Livingstone.
Thank you. I'm Jay Livingstone. I'm the state representative and have the honor of serving as co-chair with my friend and partner in this effort. And I'm a little luckier. I walked here. This is my state rep district, so welcome to the 8th Suffolk District. I represent four neighborhoods of Boston. And I always appreciate this event. And this week, there was a presentation of Mass General on a video on people who had spinal injuries and in the 50s and 60s and their involvement in the disability rights movements in Massachusetts. And it was striking to me as somebody who was born after the civil rights movement, and has taken that, you know, I was raised in a state and in a place where there was where I always had the expectation that it was welcome to everybody. And as I've learned as a legislator, especially, that it's not the case. But what was striking to me about the video is how recent it is that disability rights have been acknowledged at all in this country and in this state. And how there's probably people in this room that were in a position I know there are, before the ADA, which was signed by Herbert Walker Bush, but any rights in Massachusetts. And but that happened because of events like this, coming to the State House, reminding legislators like Senator Kennedy and I what you need to have the right to have the life that you deserve in Massachusetts. And it's an honor to serve with her in on this committee where disability is specifically something that we should be thinking about, persons with disabilities. And but we can't know everything, and so we greatly appreciate when you come to the State House and remind us what you're seeing, remind us what you're experiencing. but also reminding us of the great independence, which wasn't always the case in Massachusetts, that people have. And I really appreciate this event and think it's a great tradition to participate in. And also, I can't make any speech about disability without acknowledging Carl Richardson, because he does do a great job. And in conjunction with Commissioner Oliveira, our committees are the gold standard for the State House. I'm sure we could do it better, but for what the State House has for accessibility at our hearings. And we think it's so important, particularly because of the subject matter. So thank you for coming. Thank you for participating, and thank you for your advocacy.
Thank you, Senator Kennedy and Representative Livingstone, for your remarks and for your continued support. I'd like to take a moment now to recognize a wonderful group of students joining us today from Pittsfield Public Schools. Representing the group and reciting the Massachusetts White Cane Law is Xavier Markham, a junior at Pittsfield High, who's planning a career in law and taking many advanced placement courses to prepare for college.
Section 14A, protection of blind pedestrians crossing or attempting to cross ways. Section 14A, whenever a totally or partially blind pedestrian, guided by a guide dog or carrying in a raised or extended position a cane or walking stick, which is white in color or white tipped with red, crosses or attempts to cross a way, the driver of every vehicle approaching the place where such pedestrian is crossing or attempting to cross shall bring his vehicle to a full stop, and before proceeding shall take such precautions as may be necessary to avoid injuries such pedestrian. A person who owns an animal shall restrain and control such animal on a leash when in proximity to a guide dog that is on a public or private way. Nothing contained in this section shall be constructed to deprive any totally or partially blind person, not carrying such a cane or walking stick, or not being guided by a dog, of the rights and privileges conferred by law upon pedestrians crossing ways, nor shall the failure of such blind person to carry a cane or walking stick, or to be guided by a guide dog while on the ways of this Commonwealth be held to constitute or be evidence of contributory negligence. Whoever violates any provisions of this section shall be punished by a fine of no less than $100 nor more than $500.
Great job. Thank you. Next, we have Joe Buzon, MCB's Director of Programs and Services.
Good morning, everyone. I know we can do better than that. There's hundreds of people in here. Good morning, everyone. All right. Thank you. Well, thank you, Julie. It's a pleasure to be here today. This is my personal favorite part of the program because I truly have the privilege to really introduce all the orientation and mobility specialists at the Commission for the Blind. These are the individuals who are in the community every day, almost 365 days between all of them, in the sun, the heat, soon the snow, the rain, and assisting people who are visually impaired like myself and perhaps all of you in the audience that need mobility to get to point A to point B. So in a minute, I'm going to introduce, is the team up here? Excellent. I'm going to introduce each of them, and if I can get a great round of applause for each and every one of them once I introduce them one at a time, that would be appreciated. So our team at the Commission for the Blind starts with Region 1, who covers the Springfield area, is Michael Dion. Outstanding. Thank you. The next mobility instructor that covers Region 2 our Worcester area is Michaela Meany. And our third mobility instructor that covers Region 3, our newest member on the team, is Alex Primos. And the next mobility instructor that covers Region 4, MCV's Metro West area, is Kara Peters. And last, but certainly not least, who covers the Region 5 area, the New Bedford, Fall River, and Cape Ann areas, is Karen Barrows.
Thank you. Awesome.
Thanks, everybody. I really appreciate that. As last year, they were spread out throughout the State House or in this building, and I wanted them to ensure to come to the front so we could recognize them appropriately. Hopefully, we didn't embarrass them too much. So thank you to the orientation and mobility team, and all of you for understanding their importance of their role in being in the community in our society and making a difference with the white cane law and teaching people how to get to point A to point B. The next part, I also have the honor of the agenda here to introduce John Morgan, if he can come to the podium. And what we're going to do during this part is to talk about Jerry DeFranza. Jerry DeFranza, to say the least, was a fierce advocate. He was so persistent. He used to reach out to Commissioner Oliveira. If he didn't get out of commissioner, he would reach out to Deputy Muir and maybe Ali Bow, then myself. But the reason why he was doing this was to ensure to help and advocate around people with disabilities that used canes. He has big shoes to fill. I only can hope, being visually impaired myself, that I can have a street named after myself. And lifelong resident of Winthrop, can you believe that? He has a name. Pretty darn cool. And even most important, in terms of the RNV, he was able to rally the troops and advocate to the politicians and everybody who makes a difference to re-implement the white cane law on the question in the manual when you get your driver's license. And that's near and dear to me because my son, who's 16 and a half, is going to be getting his license in the next month or two. And the question popped up. And he was doing this via Zoom. And I'm like, Ethan, you better get that question right. So without further ado, John will tell you more about Mr. DeFranza. Mr. Morgan?
Hi, everybody, and good morning. My name is John Morgan. I'm from Winthrop, and if you don't know Winthrop, that's okay. If you walk too fast, you'll go through it anyways. Jerry and I were... I had the pleasure of knowing Jerry for 30 years, and we were neighbors for 22 of those 30 years. Jerry got me started in the advocacy. Jerry's accomplishments were so many, I'll just name a few because Joe took a lot of the wind out of my sails. Jerry was a member of the NFB. Jerry was a longtime member of the Winthrop Commission on Disabilities, the Winthrop Low Vision Support Group. He was a silver hair senator, except he didn't have silver hair and very much hair. But that was one of his favorite things for Jerry. And if I do sound cruel, I'm not being cruel, I'm being honest. Anyone who knows Jerry will understand. And if not, I apologize to anyone who feels that I'm not giving Jerry his due. The town of Winthrop last week, just because Jerry was an advocate for the blind and the hearing impaired, named a section, a walkway, Jerry DeFranza Way, which was a huge thing because this is only the second person in the history of Winthrop that ever had anything named of him, except for being part of a larger family, original family, or from Winthrop originally. There's just so much more I want to say, but I just, Jerry was my friend. I miss him. And we're all in a better place thanks to Jerry. Jerry's dedication to everything he started was from start to finish. And a lot of the things he didn't get to finish, not because he didn't try, it was for other reasons. And I had so much more to say, but like Joe took the wind out of my sails, so I don't want to repeat myself, because let's continue with the program today. Thank you, everyone, and I hope you enjoy the day.
Thank you, John. Now, I'd like to introduce Eric Manser. Eric lives in Littleton with his wife, Lisa, and his two daughters. He works as a digital accessibility consultant at Harvard University and is an active member of Littleton's Disability Commission. Eric received a bachelor's degree in psychology from Northeastern University, though he has spent much of his career with a focus on technology. He's an avid runner and ran the Boston Marathon for his 15th time this past April. Eric?
Thank you so much for the warm introduction. I'd like to extend a special thank you to our hosts here at the State House, and also a special thank you to the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind, including Carol and Joe and Commissioner Oliveira, for the invite to be here with you all today. I'd like to start with a brief description. I am a middle-aged white man with a shaved head, wearing dark-rimmed glasses. Today I'm wearing a gray suit with a light blue button-down shirt with a collar but no tie. As honored as I feel to be invited to speak here today as part of Mass Commission for the Blind's White Cane Awareness Day celebration, I definitely didn't realize how cathartic preparing for today was going to be for me. My preparation allowed me to learn so much more about the history of the white cane as a mobility aid, but also as a profound symbol of freedom and independence for those of us living with vision loss. Beyond all the learning, I was very surprised to find that my preparation included the added benefit of context. It allowed me to better understand my place within the blind community, as well as to truly see myself as a member of a much broader movement toward blind independence. Some of what I learned included that the history of cane travel, as Commissioner Oliveira shared, dates back centuries, even back to biblical times. But it's relatively recently in our history that the white cane has become recognized as the symbol that we all know today. In 1921, as Commissioner Oliveira shared, artist in England, James Biggs, who had been blinded in an accident, decided to alter the appearance of his travel cane by painting it bright white to make it more highly visible for others. In the U.S. in the 1930s, the Lions Club of Illinois is credited with expanding upon this idea when they began producing and distributing dozens of white canes, now with added red markings, to local blind citizens, and enacting an ordinance that gave blind people the right of way when traveling with a cane at street crossings. This idea took hold and began to spread to other Lions clubs all across this country. With time, more and more states began to add protections for blind travelers using these canes, and by the 1960s, Congress proclaimed October 15th to be White Cane Safety Day in all 50 states. Now, as I mentioned earlier, this history and timeline of the white cane was all really news to me as I was preparing to speak with you all today. For most of my time as a white cane user, which now goes back over 30 years, I really had no idea about any of this. Being someone who has been losing my vision slowly over time, I will confess to you that in the beginning, I was very much a reluctant white cane user. Back in those days, in the 90s, when I was a student at Northeastern right here in Boston, my biggest challenge was navigating in dim or dark spaces due to my diagnosis with retinitis pigmentosa. So here I was, 18 or 19 years old, and having to realize that if I wanted to be crossing busy Huntington Avenue during rush hour traffic after dark, I would definitely need to do something about my safety. Then I found myself for years, like my memories of those times, the earliest days of using my white cane were just so full of feelings of self-consciousness and awkwardness. Here I was, this late teen adolescent, sitting in classes all day with my fellow classmates and without my white cane. And then later, in the evenings, they'd see me, this same person who had looked so normal all day, suddenly walking around, looking like a blind guy. I just couldn't imagine what they must have thought. And so I had years of thinking about that and knowing that, you know, I spent so many years in a state of just being hyper aware of how I must be being perceived by others. And there was a long time where I avoided making eye contact so as to avoid being accused of faking my blindness. There was a long time where the only time I would use my cane was if I absolutely had to, if it was a matter of safety, or if I was in a situation where it was important that I passively let others know that I can't see very well. Honestly, I can think of more than a few times where I literally parked the car and then proceeded to use my white cane to navigate whatever event it was that I was attending. And then one day it happened. That big event that comes for so many of us that are trying in vain to fend off our blindness. The thing that makes it no longer deniable and makes it absolutely clear that the full-time use of the white cane is now a requirement. My Walmart story. On that day, without my white cane, I was making my way towards the entrance of a Walmart store from the parking lot. At the time, one strategy I had developed was to shadow my family, my wife Lisa and our daughters Ellie and Grace, following them so closely that there was basically no way that anyone was ever going to fill that space between us. For a long time, this method worked pretty well. This time, not so much. As we moved from the bright, bright outdoors through the darkened entryway of the store, the transition really slowed me down to the point that a gap began to develop between my family and me. As I struggled to keep up with my family, as I struggled to keep up with my family and as they moved further on into the store, I suddenly felt my right side and leg brush up against something. And with my very next step, I felt my foot land on something hard and uneven. And with that came the painful shriek of a young girl who must have been about 8 or 9 years old. Immediately, it became clear from her shriek and her cries that followed that what my foot had landed on was this child's foot, crushed under the full weight of my 200-plus-pound frame. In a panic, I scrambled, trying to offer any words of comfort or even just to explain myself to this inconsolable child who I was only now beginning to see. By that time, she was being held and comforted by the two adult companions that she had with her, who looked very confused as they tried to reassure me that she would be fine. This allowed me to return to trying to follow my family, but with the sobbing cries of that girl fading in the distance behind me. Needless to say, this experience, for me, as well as for them, I'm sure, was mortifying. From that moment on, I did indeed become a full-time white cane user. I went for O&M, or Orientation and Mobility Instructor, courtesy of our friend Joe Kolb and the Carroll Center for the Blind. And I soon began to realize the many benefits that came with cane travel. The confidence and safety and independence, and really felt like I could thrive by using my white cane. Eventually, I also started to hear more and more about some of the added benefits that are possible for people that use guide dogs. And, you know, some of the enhancements, things like added speed and efficiency that so many guide dog handlers seem to enjoy. And I'll admit, I was intrigued. As I heard more information, it absolutely started to seem like it was going to be the most logical next step for me. But I'll also admit that I was torn. Part of me wondered whether I was really ready to sign up for some of the other things that come along with having a guide dog. Right or wrong, some of the practical and logistical headaches that can come with being a guide dog handler. Things like Uber rejections and the added paperwork whenever you want to fly. Or even something like the possibility of doggy accidents indoors when out in public buildings. Again, I found myself somewhat reluctant and feeling unsure and once again a bit awkward. And then I met Lindsay. There are many people that are very impressive in this world. And with that, there are many, many people who are very impressive in this world who also happen to be blind. As I've lost my own vision over the years, I've had the remarkably great benefit of being able to meet many of those people. Lindsay Yazzolino is an absolute standout among those people. I'm sure many in here know Lindsay already, and I'll say that when I first met Lindsay, the things that impressed me most about her were her friendly demeanor, her quiet confidence, and her stark individuality. I mean, I don't think I've ever met anyone who so passionately celebrates Pi Day every March 14th. In a recent conversation with Lindsay, I learned that she had just come from being at a multi-day conference devoted entirely to research on bats. And of all the people I know, Lindsay is the only one who I know personally who is directly involved with Mission Astro Access, a program dedicated to ensuring that commercial space travel will be accessible to blind people. Without a doubt, Lindsay is wonderfully unique, and Lindsay is uniquely and unapologetically Lindsay. But I believe the biggest gift I got from meeting Lindsay was her incredible example of how there's no one way to be blind. We're all doing it differently, and we're all doing our absolute best with it. For each and every one of us, our individual paths are indeed our own. And so to meet Lindsay and to learn that she's been blind her entire life, and to find out that she has also opted to forego the benefits of a guide dog in favor of sticking with using the cane, for me, provided great comfort and reassurance. Lindsay, I am forever grateful for your example. So I'm going to go ahead and leave you all with this today. In our great community, none of us are ever alone. At this moment in the history of this country, I don't think there's ever been a more important time for us all to remember that. Here's to our white canes. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Eric. Now I'd like to introduce Rudy Nunez Castillo, who is a sophomore at East Boston High School. Fluent in both English and Spanish, his favorite subjects are art, technology, and language. Rudy has participated in several enrichment programs, including Perkins Camp Abilities, Perkins Weekend Programs, and the Carroll Summer Program. He's also involved in extracurricular activities such as wrestling and coding with AI. Rudy's dream is to pursue a career in technology.
How's everyone today? First, thank you for the invitation for me to assist to this great event, White Cane Day. Thank you for the opportunity for me, let me to speak in this day. I'm Rita Nunez Castillo, and this is my cane experience. Hi, my name is Rita Nunez Castillo, or as my O&M instructor calls me, Rodolfo. I'm in 10th grade, and I go to East Boston High School. I am blind but able to see lights. I am now a cane user, but I used to hate it. I am going to talk about my cane experience. When I transitioned to East Boston High School, I was someone who depended on sighted guide to move anywhere in my school. I didn't like using my cane, even though I knew how to get to certain places. I preferred sighted guide. But that all changed when I got to East Boston. In the beginning, I depended on sighted guide. I would sneakily grab an arm and ask to be guided all the time. I didn't really care about being independent. I felt sighted guide made my life easier because I didn't have to do anything. Someone would just guide me. It was then my mobility instructor would call me Mr. Lazy Bones. My mobility instructor made me travel by myself. It didn't matter if I wanted sighted guide. I had to use my cane and practice my cane skills. At first, I was mad and annoyed because I was used to sighted guide and not traveling independently. But little by little, I started to get used to using my cane and travel more. Little by little, I started to get more confident. There was one time when I was doing a lesson where my O&M made me pick up random things from random parts of the school and bring them to certain locations to meet him. During one of these missions, classes ended and the hallways turned into a party. I stayed calm. I used my cane skills. I located the item, dropped off the item, and was able to complete the mission. I felt proud and happy and wanted to go to the airport to go on a trip to celebrate. From that moment, I started to become less dependent on sighted guide and more dependent on using my cane. I started traveling to all of my classes independently. I could get my school lunch independently. I now travel the whole school using my cane and rarely ask for sighted guide. Looking back, I realized I didn't hate the cane. I hated the thought of using the cane because it was harder than using sighted guide. Even though I knew how to use a cane, I would make excuses to avoid it. Now I think the cane is cool. With the cane, I can move anywhere I want. Advice I could give to anyone who uses a cane is this. Easy does not mean better. When I used sighted guide to get to classes, it was easy, but I felt nothing. When I used my cane and traveled independently, it was hard, but I felt proud and felt that I had accomplished something. So don't give up and keep following your dreams, even if it's a hard work. I want to give a shout out to East Boston and to all the people who have supported me through these years, like Miss Lara, Miss Ariana, Mr. Benjaforti, Mr. Hannon, some of my teachers, Miss Falby, Miss Rego, Mr. Howard, and Miss Prada. And remember, and my parents too. And remember, cane work makes a dream work. This was Rudy's speech.
And just a reminder, you're listening to the Talking Information Center. We're coming to you live from the Massachusetts State House.
Thank you, Rudy.
Of White Can Awareness Day 2025. Let's go back to the podium.
Back up to the podium briefly.
All right. Hello again. I must tell a lie. I apologize. I said earlier that was my favorite part, introducing the orientation mobility team. But I was asked to come back up because last year, for those that were here, I asked everybody to take their cane out. Before they do that, it's because all the people who are visually impaired that decide to do it is listen to that cane and how it opens. And for those that are fully sighted or have some vision, look at the power of people around us and when they stand up and use that cane. So join me while I open my cane with all of you that use a cane proudly as well. That is a beautiful sound as it continues to open. Again, this is interactive. It allows us to kind of show that we use the cane. And I believe our last year keynote speaker said that we're white cane warriors. So with that said, I want to hand it back over to Julie. Thanks, everyone, for participating and taking your cane out.
Now, to announce the 2025 Meg Robertson Awards, we have Certified Orientation and Mobility Specialist, Michaela Meany.
Thank you to each of our speakers for joining us today and talking about your experience with the white cane. We're going to continue on with our white cane celebration and recognize the winners of the 4th annual Meg Robertson Mobility Award. This award is designed to celebrate the white cane and its impact in the lives of individuals who are blind and visually impaired. This is our 4th year presenting the award in 3 separate categories, which are the youth, adult, and deafblind extended supports categories. All 3 award recipients were chosen from the nominations that were submitted by the orientation and mobility specialists on their behalf. The award recognizes long cane users of all ages and abilities and are motivated individuals that demonstrate mobility skills at their level and incorporate the cane into their lives to increase independence. To present our first award, I'd like to invite up Karen Bears.
Thank you, Michaela. It is with great enthusiasm that I present Phil Zukas, the Meg Robertson Mobility Award. Phil exemplifies the spirit of this award through his exceptional O&M skills, steadfast independence, and commitment to accessible travel. Phil is a confident and skilled traveler who navigates his environment with assurance and precision. Standing tall at 6'4", Phil walks through any environment with confidence and grace, though I will say I'm somewhat tempted to bring pruning shears with me on some of our lessons for those low-lying branches. Whether commuting across town or traveling across the state, Phil demonstrates outstanding independence. He undertakes complex journeys using multiple modes of transportation with ease. From navigating unfamiliar cities for work commitments to planning leisure trips that span long distances, Phil consistently shows a mastery of orientation and mobility strategies. A testament to his skill is his seamless travel with a guide dog. Phil maintains excellent communication with his guide dog, Kit, ensuring safety and efficiency while on the move today. Kit is here today, and I believe he also deserves a round of applause and perhaps his own retirement plan. We'll call it a 401k. Phil's ability to anticipate changes in terrain, adjust to busy, unpredictable environments, and make confident, independent decisions in real time highlights his deep understanding of spatial awareness and traffic analysis. Phil's travel skills go beyond personal empowerment. They also serve as an inspiration to others in the blindness and low vision community. His journeys reflect what is possible through dedication, training, and the effective use of mobility tools. Phil models how independence can be maintained and expanded upon, regardless of location or complexity of travel. In every sense, Phil Zukas embodies the values and excellence recognized by the Meg Robertson Mobility Award. Congratulations to you, Phil.
Thank you.
We're going to take a photo before
okay.
you begin.
All right, sure.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I want to say I'm speechless. How do you follow that? Thanks so much, Karen, and for the entire team at MCB Mobility Instructors and the contracted instructors at the Carroll Center. When I first got Karen's email indicating that I had been nominated for this award, my first thought was, gee, I wonder how I'll get to the front of that room. All those chairs, all those people, everything can be a challenge, and we can overcome, and we do overcome. My first mobility instruction was with a Region 2 MCB instructor, the late Paul Cody. This was back in the late 1970s. When right turn on red first became one of our big headaches for guide dog and cane users. Paul took me to several busy intersections in Worcester and said, when you perceive the light is green, get your cane out there and go. I will say that Mr. Cody never pushed me into the street. But I had a moment of recognition that this was not just about safety, but also about courage. It's almost 50 years later. Some of the tools are the same. We've heard some of the stories about the technological advances. I'm so very grateful to the various teams that I've worked with through the years, the Maine Division of Blind and Vision Impairment Services, the Florida Division of Blind Services for the time that I was there with my wife, Karen, and also MCB and their contracted folks here at the Carroll Center. Also, a tip of the hat to the Guiding Eyes for the Blind staff in Yorktown Heights, New York, for situating me with five beautiful animals over the course of more than 30 years. So, to all of you, my fellow travelers, when you perceive the light is green, get your cane out there and go. Thank you.
Congratulations, Phil. Next, I would like to invite Lauren from the Perkins School for the Blind to honor our youth winner.
Good morning. Thank you so much to the commission for for continuing to honor Meg's incredible work through this wonderful award. I don't think we said your name yet. This is Aubrey Schulz-Neal, who has won the youth category for Meg's award. A question for you all. Do you know someone who started learning to use a white cane over Zoom? Anybody? Nobody. No one raised their hand. Or someone who started to learn the Braille alphabet without a TVI right physically by their side? Now you do. And if you already did, now you know another credible person. I'm gesturing to you, Aubrey. I met Aubrey in the winter of 2020. We began lessons on sighted guide and assistive technology in her school in Rockport. She was hesitant, but quietly open to this total stranger coming in and approaching her vision loss in a new way. She had, shall we say, a little less openness to the white cane I put into her hand. Well, March 2020 came, and we spent the next year working through a screen with my little voice coming through her iPad describing how to sweep, detect obstacles, and shoreline. Aubrey, you were a great sport, and you came back to the school campus ready to try all the Owen obstacles I threw at you, from those first few routes getting into the building and to your seat in all your classes to now riding the local bus and train, flying to Alabama with Perkins for space camp, navigating in downtown Boston for an internship this past summer, and most recently, successfully advocating for the installation of an accessible pedestrian signal in our tiny little town in Rockport. Making history here. That signal will help not just Aubrey, but other visually impaired people and all the school children in our area on the route to school to cross a very busy street that's near her home. So very proud of that. Aubrey, your O&M skills and courage have come so far, and so have you. You hold your head high. I consider it one of the greatest privileges of my life to know you and your family, to work with your amazing team in Rockport, and to watch you become the person you're meant to be. The world is your Cape Ann-based oyster, so your traveling adventures are only just beginning. Congratulations, Aubrey, on this well-deserved award. I'm going to hold the award up for a picture. Can you feel it? It's big. It's a big old plaque. It's got Braille on it. There you go. Got it?
I just want to say thank you to Lauren for putting up with me through those cane-hating years. I'm not the easiest person to deal with. I'm very stubborn. And I would like to thank my mom for allowing me to do stuff like space camp and letting her child, her blind child, travel on a plane for the first time all the way to Alabama. It was scary for both of us. And I want to thank the State House for letting me be here. It's an honor. Yeah.
Congratulations, Aubrey. Last, I would like to invite up Kara Peters to award her recipient for the Deaf, Blind, and Extended Support Program.
Good morning. My name is Kara Peters, and I am a Region 4 O&M at the Commission for the Blind. And standing next to me is Sarian Cohen, the DBES Meg Robertson Award winner. Sarian initially reached out for O&M support as it related to her orientation and travel at the day program. She attends the PACE program in Cambridge a few days per week. Sarian really enjoys sharing her voice during karaoke. When I first met Sarian, her clear desire for greater autonomy was evident. She explained that she would like to walk on her own to the bathroom. She was confident that she had the ability to learn, but that the environment and the staff's understanding of her travel skills were a barrier to her ability to apply her O&M skills. Throughout training, Sarian has been an active participant in reaching her goals. She is a long white cane traveler and benefited from repetition in clear and consistent landmarks and clues for memory support and increased independence while traveling through the hallways. She advocated for her needs and explained what teaching strategies were helpful. For instance, she noted that she was sometimes seated in the middle of a large room and then would feel stuck because it was not easy to get out. It was decided that she have an assigned seat at a specific table near the back of the room for easier navigation out of the room and for consistency of her orientation mental map. Also, the staff at this program were very supportive in participating in an in-service on blindness. And the PACE OT provided weekly support on her routes. Sarianne is now navigating in and out of the main activity room independently to access the restroom on her own. She is applying her learned O&M skills, including hand trailing, squaring off, and connecting with clues for orientation. After success at the day program, Sarianne requested support in her home neighborhood and is completing a short route to the nearby pizza shop. I am so pleased to have Sarianne come with us. We took an Uber together today, so she's super brave for kind of, you know, coming out to the big state house and being with you all. So let's have a round of applause for Sarianne.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm supposed to this microphone. I'd like to say thank you to Karen Peters for helping me, you know, practice going up to Garen Rest, Guy Pizza Place, you know, practice a couple of times, and because when I used to go up there and I went to a Highland Market, I never fell and I never had this accident. But since I had the trouble, it was my fault what I did. Walk fast, shouldn't have to do that. So you know, I just want to say thank you to Karen Peters for helping me and showing me a couple of times, and what's the guy's name here? John Alavera? John Alavera? I'm not really independent, but I'm just independent for some things at home and, you know, a lot of, certain, hobbies I like to do. But, anyway, I'd like to thank everybody here for having me over, inviting me today, because I've never been here since the other teacher I had, Grace, but I'm glad to be here today. And I'd like to thank everybody at the State House. Okay, Gara.
Sarianne, I'm on your right now.
Okay, Gara.
And I'm going to hold up your plaque.
All right.
And they're going to take a picture of us.
All right.
And once again, we're coming to you live from the Massachusetts State House Great Hall of Flags, bringing you coverage of White Cane Awareness Day in Massachusetts 2025. Sending things back to the podium.
Congratulations to all. Now, let's welcome back to the podium Commissioner John Alavera.
Wow, I have to follow that act? My goodness. All right. Thank you so much for all coming out today. It's been a great program. you've heard of many, many different situations where the folks here have learned and accepted the use of the white cane. Sometimes it takes a little bit of, reinforcement, accidents that could happen in life and different things that could happen. But it all comes down to that. Once you get to accept it, that the white cane is the tool that you need to help you get around independently with dignity and make sure that you can really fulfill your life dreams and the way you want to live by using whichever tool. Now, we talk about a lot about the white cane, but the dog guides are also wonderful. And like Eric, my story might be similar to his, why we don't use a dog. But basically, whatever tool works for you, that's what's important here. And it's important that you're comfortable with that tool so that you can go out and live your life the best you can. And again, in closing, I'd like to thank Carl Richardson. I didn't mention him at the beginning, but he brought in a lot of volunteers, a good number of volunteers to help us out here today. And many of the volunteers came from our legislators' offices, aides that work for the different representatives and senators. And every time I go in front of the committee to advocate for funding for MCB, I think of all of you, the different needs that you have, and the different services that we provide. That's what I'm advocating for. And when we sit in front of that committee and they ask me sometimes difficult questions, I have to have the answers to fulfill the answers to those questions that they have. And depending on how I do in front of that committee and depending on how our advocates perform, advocates are essential to making sure that MCB has the funding we need so that we can provide the services for our nearly 28,000 legally blind people here in Massachusetts. And I appreciate all your work behind the scenes, different conferences, different meetings you may go to. Keep advocating, because we need to let the legislators know that we are here and we need the services that the agency provides and that you can benefit from those services. And who better to testify than all of you who have taken advantage and have used those services well to make sure that you are able to live the life in the community that you want to live. Thank you so much for coming, and you have a great day.
Thanks for listening to Lowell Association for the Blind's Lab Radio. Lab Radio is a member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. There are many ways to listen to Lab Radio. Request a free specialized receiver, or for more information about our radio reading service, call Lab at 978-454-5704. You can listen to Lab Radio anytime by dialing 1-631-359-9069 or visit our website where you can tune into Lab Radio at LowellAssociationForTheBlind.org. Thanks for listening.